Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and today's conversation is one that cuts through noise, stigma, and stereotypes. Today's guest is someone many will know for his humour, energy, and honesty, but behind the laughter lies a journey that's deeply real and profoundly inspiring. Daniel O'Reilly, known to millions as Dapper Laughs, first rose to fame as a comedian and performer, but in recent years, he's become a strong voice for men's mental health, addiction, recovery, and personal accountability. He's spoken openly about his experience with addiction, ADHD, parental alienation, and the long road to healing and self-discovery. Through vulnerability, humour, and truth, he's helping to reshape the conversation around struggle, not as weakness, but as a vital part of growth and transformation. Daniel, it's a real pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. Thank you very much for having me. I'm blessed to be here.
Thank you. So let's dive in, not just into the story people think they know, but the one that really matters, your truth. So Dan, you've been in the public eye for years, but the man you are today seems so different from the one people first met. What shifted you from that time? When did you start to see your life and purpose differently?
Ah, such an interesting question. I think it's twofold, really. Maybe first of all, I was just putting out content at the beginning. I was doing character-based content. The infamous character that I used to portray, one of them was Dapper Laughs, and it was intentionally quite controversial. It was I was seeing growth through being very close to the line and you know, being a talking point from a comedy perspective. And also my comedy and my life, my comedy always reflected sort of what was going on in my life. So outside of Dapper Laughs, a lot of my comedy sketches and things that I did involved going out, lad culture, really, going out, drinking, the sesh culture in the UK, which is like, you know, clubbing, drugs, all of that stuff. And my life online and my persona online was very much just comedy based and content based. I think that maybe people started to perceive me a little bit different when I went on Big Brother, on Celebrity Big Brother, because it was me. It was me that was on there, and there was no editing from me, obviously. But people maybe saw that there wasn't any malice in what I did or who I was. It was more that I was just a bit immature, a bit silly. Do you know what I mean? But really, for me, the massive change came when my father passed away, around the same sort of time that my career took a dip. I was heavily into my addiction and I became suicidal. And I had a turning point where I spoke to the Samaritans one night on drugs and a complete mess, sort of falling apart. And that began sort of a journey, you know, I survived that night, and that began sort of a journey of wanting to get better and realizing that I was not right, that I was in a mess. It took me another 6 years to stop drinking and taking drugs, but I was doing counseling and I was trying to work out my issues and still be able to, you know, enjoy a drink. I never thought that I was an addict, and it wasn't until things started affecting my family, my wife and my kids, we broke up, or she'd had enough, basically, that I didn't recognise who I was. You know, I'd always been okay with being a fake controversial figure. You know, being in the media, being disliked by people that didn't know me. But when it was my real life, and when I realised that I didn't like who I was looking at, you know, or how I was treating my wife, or not being present on the weekends for the kids and being hungover and stuff like that, when I looked all of that in the face, I hit a true rock bottom and had to start building myself up. You know, I went to rehab and then came out of that, and then had to... Well, I had to work on myself before I won Shelley's trust back, that I was going to change my life around and stay sober. And it was about just over three years ago, and it's been profound, that journey. Like you said in the intro, a real journey of accountability. And I've taken my audience on that journey and built a charity and built this a podcast that I did and built a Facebook group with 60,000 lads in, all through not using addiction as an excuse, but being accountable for my actions and talking openly about what I've got wrong and how I'm trying to make it right, and putting my family first.
And that's amazing. You've done brilliantly, and you've done so much. I mean, I know this firsthand because, as you know, I've shared this with you in the past, where I've spoken about your journey and how it's impacted others as well. Just by your honesty, people have approached me, clients have approached me, and you have saved lives. You've saved people from suicidal crisis, and that's phenomenal. And they've watched you evolve into the person you are today, and it's amazing what you're doing. And just by you sharing your story and what they've told me, it's kept them going. And I really appreciate everything that you've shared about your darkest moments. It takes a lot of, I would say, courage to do so, to share those moments. And recovery is never a straight line, as we know, Dan. But what were the really toughest challenges along the way, and what kept you grounded through them? I know you shared about your family and getting back with your wife, but what else was there within you that drove you to that recovery?
I mean, you know, I think one of the main points of my story that has resonated, especially with men, is that I did not think I had a problem, because I could take days off drinking. You know, I wouldn't drink Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then I'd be back feeling better and back into drinking Thursday, Friday, and taking drugs Friday and Saturday. And I didn't realize at the time I was either drunk, high, or hungover. I was never, you know, at my base or at zero. And I was suffering really badly with horrific anxiety, suicide ideations, and also like delirious panic attacks, you know, on come down. So I'd like run out of my house. But that was going on for years. And I just thought that I was just having bad drinking sessions or come downs and stuff. It wasn't until I started coming out the back end of it that I realized that I had serious mental health issues. But a big part of me discussing it was finding out in real time online about the effects of drinking drugs, and also just coming to terms with the fact that I can't have one or two, and actually, why do I want to when I've got kids? Why do I, you know, and having these conversations openly about why, you know, why is it so hard for me to give up on that life? And it was so hard. And, you know, I lost a lot of friends. I reckon I lost 90% of my friends. And I just couldn't handle the thought. And I think many men can't handle the thought of not having that aspect of their social life or the escapism. And what I realized was that's what it was. You know, I didn't want to have one or two drinks. Even the thought in the early days of my sobriety of just having one drink was never a thought of mine. It was pure oblivion. And that's when I realized that I seriously had a problem. I wanted to escape my own life. Getting sober was difficult. The most difficult part of getting sober is not being able to escape your feelings that are coming at you harder than they ever have because you're sober, you know? And there's a lot of guilt and shame. And I think that's what men drink for, you know? Guilt and shame around things they've done or things they're not doing or not achieving. They're not the person they want to be, or the week hasn't gone the way they want. And this guilt and shame and horrible feeling they drink. So when you get sober, you get that feeling from your whole life, not just a heavy drinking session the night before, your whole life, you know, that you've spent drinking. I started drinking when I was probably 14, 13 years old. And it's like discovering a whole new person that you've got to get to know and live with. And it reshaped my whole life. It's the most difficult, but the most rewarding thing that I've ever been through. But I still struggle now. My ADHD sometimes really, really flares up to the point where I'm completely overstimulated. I had it yesterday, actually, where so many things were going on in the week, and it was just, and then I had a tour show, And then I had a 5-hour drive back, and then I was handed the baby when I got back, because I was like, I need the baby, because I haven't seen the baby. I feel tremendous guilt because Jax is only like 2 months old. So I'm like, as soon as I come back, give me the baby. She hands me the baby. And then the baby was crying a little bit, and I was felt guilty that I couldn't settle the baby. And then, oh, it just all come at me at once, like the feeling of the week. And my thoughts go to drinking. How can I escape this? And luckily enough, I've built up a toolbox where when I get like that, I've got a few things that I do to settle my mind, but it will always be there. And I think discussing that and talking about how your thoughts don't have to become actions, and how your habits are just neurological links in your brain, and, you know, how triggers, you know, like nighttime, being in the city at night will trigger me wanting to drink, or being in a pub garden or a bank holiday weekend or a sunny afternoon in a pub. Teaching men that these are triggers, not that thought comes into your mind and you don't know where it's from, you don't know why it's come there, and the only option you have is to act on it, and that's to drink. And I think showing that resilience consistently as in spite, and also being successful, to be honest with you, while this is going on, being successful in my love life with my wife, you know, being successful in my family life, and then being successful in my work life for the first time in many, many, many years, you know, selling out tours and shooting a film and stuff like that. I think people watch it and go, oh, well, actually, it's not that bad going sober.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's amazing that you're being so honest and so transparent in every step of the way of what you've experienced yourself personally, and our audience would really appreciate that. And for the first time, as you said, in years, you're showing up fully, which is incredible. And
that's a great way to put it. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
You're showing up fully, and the results speak for themselves, don't they? I mean, as you said, look at what you've achieved, the journey you've been through, and you've come out the other end, selling out tours, shooting a film, being present at home. That's not small. That's the kind of success that comes from clarity and consistency and emotional honesty. And so when people look at your journey now and think, actually, maybe it does make sense to be clean, not drink so much, not escape in any way, because you have more power when you're free of those things. And it really will help people to actually then want to reach out and maybe get that help themselves, because there's a lot of people that can relate to the addiction side. And I know I can't disclose too much, but I'm going back to one of the clients that I had, and they spoke about you. And in fact, you know, I learned more about your journey, Daniel, through him rather than social media than anything else. And then I decided to look up you and look at your story and where you're coming from. So it was really interesting, because everything he described is every part of the journey that you've been through, but he couldn't seem to pull himself away from it. And that's why he was seeking help from a psychotherapist like myself. But what you're doing, and then by him watching you come through the other side and actually sober up and that clarity, it really helped him pull himself through. And that's amazing. And I think that's the part that a lot of people don't see, especially on social media and on the media as well, about your journey.
I think it swings and roundabouts for me, because I still do get a lot of grief from people on social media, you know, from mistakes that I've made or pushing the line too far when I was trying to be relevant. And you know, as a comedian, you actually try and be, you know, we all have different tastes in comedy, and trying to be controversial, you know, sometimes can come across as such a negative thing, but actually it's just a way that people express themselves creatively. Like, that's the way my mind writes. But saying that, I think it still plays an important part in my life. You know, even the people in the media, the newspapers and stuff, that constantly remind me, you know, I'll do a charity event where we're raising money or we launched the charity, and there'll be remarks in there, you know, about you know, don't forget this is the person that done this, and don't forget this is the person that does that. And when I do read that stuff, I used to push back against it. And this is something I do talk to men about, and I do talk on my social media about. Mm. When you kick off about things like that, or when you're angry about them and you speak out about them and you lash out and you're triggered by them, it's because there's truth in it, right? If there wasn't any truth in things that people say to you, it would be like water off a duck's back, because you know yourself. So I don't mind being reminded of my faults in the past, because I believe it shows you, it can show you how far, you shouldn't be ashamed of the stuff that you've done. That's, and this is what I talk to about men, about accountability. Don't be ashamed about who you are, unless you're still the same person. And if you're working towards, it shows a story that people can see and take inspiration from. But also you can gauge that, like those things I read from time to time, that's a gauge for me on how far, I can see how far I've come. And I think that men learn from mistakes notoriously better than anyone else, you know. And I'm not perfect now, and I still like to talk about the stuff that I'm getting wrong, because social media can be so rosy, you know what I mean? You see people, yeah, with nice houses, nice cars, and everything, and you think, and you know, you can think, well, why you feel inadequate, you know, why isn't it going right for me? So I like to show people as well, you know, I'm still working on the way I think, I still work on the way that I react to things. And I think that is really important with men, you know. Like for me, my relationship with Shelley now, my wife, is different. And I think it's different for different reasons, not just because I changed. Well, obviously we weren't working for our own reasons back when we were having issues. But the primary reason for it was she had lost respect for me, because I didn't respect myself, respect the family. And I was out drinking, and all I was thinking about was getting out. And then I was breaking promises, I was coming in drunk and all this, until, you know, and I wasn't a very nice person when I was hungover. You know, I was moody, grumpy, just giving the kids the iPad, you know, all of that stuff. I didn't want to go out and do things. But once I changed and she became proud of me, I saw the change in her, the way that she treated me as well. You know, it wasn't just about how I was treating her, you know, I saw the change in how she treated me. I saw her change into someone that respected me more and was proud of me. And that's something that I talk about to men a lot. I'm like, imagine the feeling of people being proud of you instead of feeling like you're letting everyone down all the time. And, you know, me and her now, we are so quick to tie up any little arguments. Whereas before, if something stupid had happened, you know, like the other day, I was in the kitchen. It was just something as simple as I'm working on my phone, trying to edit and post a video, and she stood behind me with the baby. And I turned around and I'm like, are you waiting for me to finish so I can take the baby? And she wasn't. She's like, no, I'm not. I'm just standing here. And then there was almost this like little moment where she was like, why don't you want to take the baby? And I was like, you know how these arguments start? Mm, and it's like, it's nothing. But we both looked at each other and like kind of smiled. And I thought, wow, man, that really would have been something back in the day. But we both know each other so well now that we know that although we can be, you know, annoying and aggy and maybe a little bit insensitive sometimes, that there's no venom in us anymore. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's come from accountability, but also come from checking, you know, checking ourselves from time to time. But more importantly, from making her proud by putting the family first. You know, us men can say whatever we want, but keeping myself away from the pub and staying in for nearly 4 months of my life to really try and get out of that routine, cutting certain people out of my life, completely dedicating myself to sobriety, getting up at 4:30 every morning to go boxing at 5 o'clock, to get that dopamine and to feel like I'd achieved something. I just thought if I just keep boxing, it would get me through a day, you know, and sharing that, doing the podcast and everything. And then sitting there in front of her, she's like, okay, yeah, you are who you say you are now, you know.
And and that self-awareness that you have and creating that better relationship with yourself has actually created a really secure relationship that you have. And that's amazing. And you have come so far. And that level of commitment that you described as well, that's what people don't see. They see the highlight reel, don't they? And really, it goes deeper than that. It's just what you say about yourself now and what you're achieving. It's inspiring. And I
Thank
think,
you. Yeah, thank you for that.
no, it really is. And not only your wife being proud of you, but people that know you and have seen that growth, I'm sure everyone is very proud of you in that sense. And again, you're taking accountability for those moments where you may have a little bit of a wobble, and it's comes back to that self-awareness, doesn't it, Dan? I think it's really important to acknowledge yourself as well. And earlier on, you spoke openly about ADHD, and even when you are recognizing the moments where it plays up, or you have moments where you can't focus so much. Knowing this, how do you manage, or what helps you manage your focus, creativity and emotions when the ADHD does surface to that extent?
Oh God, you know, I can't even pretend to say that I understand my ADHD, because it's so confusing. I don't, but I now know how to manage it, and I now know when it is the ADHD. Through my there's so many different levels to ADHD, but I'll just tell you a little story. When I got diagnosed, I was shooting a film called Bermondsey Tales, and I was getting my diagnosis done after shooting sessions via Zoom. So I was having these long Zoom sessions with a doctor that specializes in neurodiversity and all that. And when it came to the end of one of the sessions where she was sorting the stuff out, she was like, just so you know, while you were doing this, while I was trying to, you know, do your analysis, you brushed your teeth, you changed your top, you moved the laptop 17 times. And I was in a hotel room, right? And she was listening to all of these things, like my inability to stay focused. But I knew I had to stay focused on this thing, but I have no interest in what we were talking about. And then she went through her diagnosis, and you know, she said, you've got severe ADHD and da-da-da-da-da, and taking into account, obviously, my mental health issues and susceptibility to heightened emotions and depression, anxiety, and all of this stuff. I started to learn a little bit more about it, but it wasn't until I got my diagnosis and I started to learn about it that I started to see it. I started to feel it. Before, it was just the way I was, but now I can feel it. I can feel the confusion in my mind. You know, I can pinpoint it. That's my ADHD. And I can go through bouts of having no ideas to having, like, you know, I can come and sit in my office where I am now, and I want to write a sketch. I want to do something funny. I have space and time to create something for my social media, and I can sit there and nothing comes, and it's peaceful. And actually, when those times happen, I don't try and push it. I think, right, what I'm actually going to do is I'm going to try and either do a little bit of admin or something, or relax. Or actually, 9 times out of 10, I try and get out of my office when I know there's nothing going on in my head, and sit down and relax, because it's few and fleeting. It hardly ever happens. Normally I sit down and everything comes at me at once. And I found that sugar, caffeine, and any sort of stimulant that I take makes it worse. I find that if I don't burn off my anxiety early in the day, so if I don't work out in the morning, that my ADHD is worse. And I feel like it feels like I'm in a constant mode of fight or flight unless I do those things. Unless I burn off the anxiety, burn off the excess energy. I've got a journal every day. I've got to empty my mind of everything that my mind's trying to tell me. And it's those simple things really. Watching my diet. I don't take any of the medication. I never have tried it. I've always been kind of nervous about doing it because my work is creative based. But sometimes if there's a mixture of things that have gone wrong, if I haven't watched my diet, if I haven't been able to exercise like I haven't been able to recently just because of the babies, I've got one and a bit year old and a 2-month-old as well as the other two. And if it's a combination of those things and life comes at me fast and there's multiple problems that I've got to sort out, and I feel like I can't, because I've got businesses as well, and I feel like I can't focus on one, then burnout happens. And that happens to me probably once a fortnight, which is quite intense. It probably sounds quite a lot, but there is a lot going on in my life. And what that looks like is overwhelming anxiety, like pulsing in my head, and an inability to speak sometimes. It's like I can speak, but I just can't. I'm just like, I just can't. And that's when I know that I have to move away from everyone, just step back. So it is quite intense. They've recommended me medication for it, but when I focus on something like a film, writing a film or writing my stand-up or performing my stand-up or something like that, it's like a magical power. It's like a gift. You know, I can write for hours and then it can come out being some of the funniest stuff you've ever seen and it just falls out of my face. So I just don't want to quell that, you know?
And I think it's so powerful that you're able to describe everything that you experience with such articulation. Really, a lot of people would be able to relate to it and understand exactly what you're going through. Actually, journaling and the boxing.
Journaling is so good for me, yeah.
All of those things are really powerful, aren't they? And you're right, you don't want to shut that part of yourself off, that creativity, then that raw creativity, the way things just spill out of you, the part that's the part of you that's magic. So thank you, Dan, for your honesty so far. Let's take a short break now for a word from our sponsors. You're listening to The Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at ukhealthradio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and we're here with the brilliant and brave Daniel O'Reilly. Before the break, Dan shared openly about mental health, addiction, ADHD, and the courage it takes to rebuild your life from the inside out. Welcome back, Dan.
Hiya.
So you've turned humour, something that once got you into trouble, into a way to connect and heal. How do you now use comedy to bring light to serious topics?
Oh, wow. Well, that's a beautiful question. My stand-up comedy tour last time and this brand new tour that I'm doing at the moment, I do mix in actually a lot of tragic stuff that's happened to me. And actually the ethos behind my new tour show, Let's Have It, we're out every Friday and Saturday for a year, is reshaping vulnerability into strength, but also just sort of showing the beauty of how tragedy can be funny. How if we can look at the state of our lives and the state of the things we go through in a positive, funny way, it can reshape it in our mind, you know. And I finished my show, my new show, by sort of saying to the audience that, you know, everything that you've been through, that's happened to you, that you've survived, is now a story that can help other people. And I actually tell a story. I actually finished the show on telling a story about how my father passed away and the last things that my dad last thing that my dad said to me was a joke before he actually went into a coma after he'd had a stroke. And I tell jokes around my dad dying. I tell jokes around my addiction. I tell jokes around, you know, getting cancelled and stuff like that. I say to people, everyone in the audience, you're all wearing masks. And right now you've got a happy, smiling, funny mask on that, you know, you're in here laughing at what I'm saying. But underneath that mask, you've all got your own stuff going on, whether, like me, you've lost someone you love, or you're struggling with money problems or work problems, addiction issues. But tonight you've decided that you're going to laugh, right? And you forgot about it. We can experience loss and we can experience regret and stuff like that, but we don't have to live in them feelings. And I think it's really important to the journey that I've been on has everything is centered around what my mind is telling me and the tricks my mind's playing on me. When I've got ADHD, when my ADHD has gotten bad and my overthinking has really consumed me, I can go in a week from being exactly where I feel I'm meant to be, like completely on purpose, and I can feel my success and I can feel that I'm meant to be doing what I'm doing and that it's making a difference and that I'm supporting my family and that the future looks bright. I can feel like that on a Tuesday, and on a Thursday I can hate myself and think that I'm never going to come up with anything funny again, that my tour is going to fail, that I'm being a bad dad, that I'm irrelevant and everyone hates me. And I know that when that thought comes into my mind, sometimes it takes me a little bit longer than other times, but at some point I will be like, oh yeah, that's your mind. That's your mind playing tricks on you. You're having a little bit of a downward turn. You got to make sure, are you drinking enough water? Are you eating enough fruit? Are you scrolling on social media too much? Look, are you looking at negative stuff on social media? Have you been training? Are you putting off things that you've got to deal with? Are you consuming positive content? Are you writing in your journal? And I tick all the stuff off my list. Normally, by the time I've done that, I've convinced that voice in my head that it's, that I know, or I've told that voice in my head that I know it's not real. You know, and normally those thoughts and feelings have stemmed from something that has happened, a negative comment online. I can get sent into spirals from that. And talking about that stuff, it seems so trivial, but talking about that stuff online, you know, I put a post up yesterday on my Facebook, 500,000 people on there saying, be careful about what your mind's telling you. And the amount of people that are like, yeah, my God, you're so right. Like, everything's actually all right. What am I doing? And there's no better way to communicate that than with something that people laugh at the same time.
And that's the truth. So many people need to hear, Dan. You can feel sadness, regret, fear, all of it, without having to live there. And what you're describing is the honesty of the mind that can lift you to purpose one week and drag you into doubt the next. But the difference now is that you see it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, you're trying to get them, even in when you've got the audience live in front of you, you're trying to get them to recognize it within themselves and recognize that the mind is tricking them and that things will happen. But before you spiral, pause. And that vulnerability, it's amazing that you are being so vulnerable with your emotions and your feelings and what you've experienced yourself. Changing those sad moments and thinking about the good as well. But there's been moments of that pain and that deep pain that you spoke about with parental alienation and the emotional toll that came with. How did that experience shape your view on fatherhood and relationships?
I think that my first sort of experience from that came from my mum and my father going through an horrific divorce, and I mean like horrific, and you know, us having to go to court, and then my father not really having or not being able to have a relationship with me until into my teens. You know, they had such a bad divorce. My mum was such a mess as well. That affected me. That must have affected me as a child. And It certainly affected me. I certainly learned a lot about it through my counselling, but it certainly affected me in the way I became, a bit of a people pleaser, and I wanted everyone to like me. And it's probably why I got into the entertainment industry, and probably why I thrived on the mechanism of social media, constant gratification and approval. But it did lead me into doing a lot of work through my charity, Men and Their Emotions, because it is. Such a taboo subject and a difficult one to talk about, because the system essentially makes men beg to be able to see their children, beg to be fathers, prove that they are good fathers, and there's a lot of the system, the whole court system around, parents and seeing their children and custody and all that is very out of date. But ultimately, the reason why I expressed an interest in that is because it's one of the leading causes of suicide in men. Yeah. And a lot of my work, like with my film and with the group, because the group is a place where men can post anonymously. And they can seek lived experience from other men, can wade in. And that conversation's all in there. What do I do? What do I pay for? You know, should I do this? Shouldn't I do that? Is this right? How do I navigate the court system? And it's a massive conversation between men. I mean, men are angry when they're going through divorces anyway, and we're immature. But men are not emotionally equipped to deal with that process. It's a recipe for disaster, but it needs reform, unfortunately. It needs complete overlooking. But I don't pretend to know anything about it. But what I do like to do is to be a cushion for men, for the group to be a cushion for men to lay on, to rest their head on, while other men that have been through the process advise them. Because there is a lot of real, decent, proper advice and accountability that men need to listen to in those situations, because they can make a lot of unnecessary mistakes. You know what I mean? Their anger and frustration and, ultimately a massive part of that whole process of going through a breakup and all of that, a massive part of that is men focusing on working on themselves so they don't lose themselves in that process, in a deep, dark hole. Do you know what I mean? So looking after themselves, keeping themselves mentally, physically fit, working on their addictions and trying to sort things out. But I'm sure that I have an interest in that because of what happened with my family, but it is such a tricky subject.
It is a tricky subject. And that honesty is exactly what cuts through, Dan, because you're not denying the reality, you're acknowledging it. And yes, men often enter the process completely unequipped, emotionally not ready, and carrying that guilt and shame, and as you said, sometimes that addiction or immaturity, and it's simply they don't have the tools. But just being there and being that soundboard is phenomenal. So thank you once again, Dan. Your insights are very encouraging, and as I said earlier, inspiring. Let's take another short break. Don't go anywhere, we'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. I'm here with the inspiring Daniel O'Reilly, a man who isn't just rebuilding his life, but redefining what accountability, healing, and masculinity look like today. Let's continue. Now, Dan, you've often said forgiveness, especially forgiving yourself, was a major part of your journey. What does self-forgiveness mean to you now?
I think that the key to forgiving yourself, especially as men, is to look a little bit deeper into your behavior. You know, we need to understand who we are, where we've come from, you know, what our filters are, and, you know, what chances we were offered and what we weren't, and what shaped our opinions and what shaped us as men. You know, where was our influence? What were we influenced by? What was the examples we were shown? Were we loved? Do you know what I mean? Were we abandoned? All of these things shape who we are. You know, having a son now, after having three daughters, having a son has been a profound experience for me as well. I felt an overwhelming feeling of, well, love initially when Jax arrived, but responsibility. And I suddenly, not that obviously I don't have the responsibility of raising my daughters, I do, and hopefully I'll teach them how a man should behave and treat them, and instill my own personal values into them, and that we'll be able to communicate and they'll always be open and vice versa. But with a son, if I felt an overwhelming, you know, feeling of, oh wow, like I've got to get this right. He's got to see the right person. And I felt so proud that I'd got to a stage where he'd arrived and I was sober. I could talk to him articulately. I could explain to him about his feelings and his emotions and the things he's going to come up against in himself. And I'm ready for him to make his own mistakes. And I think that he'll have an easier life than I will, because I'm going to try and try and shield him from maybe how my childhood was. And through that process, through having children, through getting through it all, and through being sober, you learn to forgive yourself, because I think it's not always all our fault, you know. We're a product. We can't blame our parents, but we're a product of the world. Do you know what I mean? It's not, you can blame your parents to a certain extent, you know, as I'm sure my kids will with me, but you've got to forgive your parents for their mistakes as well. They're who they are. That's the life. That's the cards life dealt them. But, you know, accountability can only go so far. You know, you can only work with the cards you're given. As long as you know your faults and your mistakes, and you try and understand why you made those choices or ended up the way that you did. I mean, I know that my ADHD would have definitely played a part in my addiction. You know, we have people with ADHD have dopamine deficiencies. The way that I feel when I drink or take drugs may be different from the normal person. The way that my mind is very noisy and overwhelming at times, too much. You know, before I knew anything about ADHD or drink or drugs or the effects of alcohol or cocaine or addiction or anything like that, I was just a guy that was getting to the end of the week going, whoa, mate, I need a release. I need something to calm. I need something to take the edge off this, because I'm going to explode. And then having a couple of beers and sitting there going, oh, yeah, that's better. Mm-hmm. And then turning that very same feeling and thought process into action when my father died, or when I was having arguments with my wife, or, you know, when uncomfortable feelings were coming in, it was the same thing. I need to take the edge off. And that turned into a coping mechanism, which turned into an addiction, you know. So to answer your question, forgiveness comes from understanding why you were the way you were.
That's amazing what you've shared with everyone today. It comes from understanding it, understanding why you were the way you were. Once you understand why you were the way you were, the coping, the addiction, the pressure behind it, forgiveness stops being the big emotional task. It just becomes clarification and you're not excusing it. You're finally understanding it. And Dan, you've inspired a lot of people by being open about your mistakes and the growth. What advice would you give to anyone who's struggling to start again after feeling they've messed up?
I think that the key is to look forward, you know, not look back too much. The only reason you should be looking back is to see how far you've come and you haven't moved yet. So for a moment, just for a moment, give yourself a little bit of a break, you know, stop looking at what's going wrong and look forward. I've got to make it one day, I've got to make it 2 days, I've got to make it 3 days. You know, you've got to put in place it. I'd say that if you're at the moment at a rock bottom, if you've hit a brick wall, if you've caused a load of havoc or drama, or if you've just given up on trying to sort yourself out, then you really, really need to work on putting a couple of systems in place, just a few markers in your day, two or three things that you must consistently do every day. A bit of exercise, eating properly and not drinking, or whatever it is that your thing is. Just a couple of markers, a couple of achievable goals that you can get some wins from in one day, and then stack up the days. Because I believe that we suffer with low self-esteem. I certainly suffer with low self-esteem and negative self-talk. And I think it's a result, ultimately, of how I'm treating myself. If I forget those things that I'm meant to be doing to give myself proof that I'm doing the right stuff, I start disliking myself. It's like having two people in your head and one of them is making a deal with the other one. One of them saying, today we're not going to drink. Today we're going to exercise. Today we're going to eat well. Today we're going to write in our journal. And the other one going, yeah, okay, thank you. I'm really happy that you said that. And then the other one not doing it. And then that other person in your head that you've made the deals with is going, well, you're not a very nice person, are you? You're not being honest. You're not going to do anything for me. And I don't like you. And that's how we talk to ourselves. That's what I believe. So the only way you can change that conversation in your head is by making the deals, sticking to them until those two people in your head are getting on with each other. And then everything slowly becomes a bit easier. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. When you've come through the chaos or drama, you can't just hope your life will hold together on its own. You have to build systems, routines, those small anchors like the self-talk in your day, and that will keep you steady. And that's amazing. Dan, thank you so much for your honesty, your courage, and your willingness to talk about the parts of life many people hide. That's what makes conversations like this so important. You remind us that redemption isn't a straight line, healing isn't instant, and growth isn't glamorous, but it is possible. And you're living proof of that. So thank you so much. And to our listeners, if today's conversation has touched you, please reach out for support, talk to someone you trust, or connect with organisations that can help. And Dan, if people did want to connect with you, where can they reach you?
It's always good to jump on my Instagram, but just be warned, there is a lot of crazy comedy on there as well as my mental health chat, so it's not for the easily offended. But you can get me on either my personal one, Daniel O'Reilly, or if you do want it with the comedy, Dapper's Instagram.
Thank you for that. To our audience, you're never alone and you're never beyond rebuilding. We're closing today's show with a song that captures the spirit of owning your story and embracing your humanity. Human by Rag and Bone Man, because acknowledging our flaws is the first step towards freedom. I'm Belinda Walia and this has been the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. Until next time, take care of your mind, your heart and each other.
Maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying. But I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put your blame on me. Take
in the mirror, what do you see? Do you see it clearer, or are you deceived in what you believe? 'Cause I'm only human after all, and you're only human after all. Don't put the blame on me. Don't put your blame on me. Me to lie and beg for forgiveness for making you cry, for making you cry.